And our special guest this hour, Jeffrey Stanley. We're talking about his works on the other side. He's developed some incredible plays tied into some of the supernatural as well. So we're going to come back in a moment and take your calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Stanley with us, and of course, your phone calls. Jeffrey, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, I read it when I must have been about 21 years old, right around there, along with the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Fascinating. Now, I didn't understand it at that age. It's a yeah. Tough read.
Yeah, it is. And I think, too, I'm guessing that translations today, like I know the translation I have, it's pretty recent of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And it's, you know, it's kind of written in a user-friendly way. It's a little bit more close to modern English, and it's heavily footnoted. So, yeah, you definitely still have to do some muddling. You have to really want to read it and get through it. You definitely can't rush your way through it. And I'm, you know, I'm certainly not an expert. I'm a complete dilettante with it. But I've gotten increasingly familiar with it as time has gone on over the past few years that I've been spending time with it.
Do you find that it's different from the Egyptian Book of the Dead, or are there similarities there?
Well, similarities in concept. I'm definitely less familiar with the Egyptian Book of the Dead, but conceptually they're the same. I mean, I spent years hearing those titles and not really even getting what they were even supposed to be about, but, you know, it's really kind of cool, touching in a way. I mean, it's advice. The Tibetan Book of the Dead, they're both more or less this, advice to about what to do when you die. Here's what's going to happen to you when you die, and here's how to prepare for it. So, I mean, if you're within that belief system, it's extremely comforting because it's very specific. You know, here's what's going to happen exactly.
How did they know this?
How did they know this? Well, yeah. You know, that gets into some, you know, serious mysticism, you mm-hmm. know. Probably get a better answer from the Dalai Lama or from a Tibetan Buddhist monk, but you know they went into trances, they communed with the other side. I mean, you know, they did some pretty extreme self abnegation techniques, and they still do. You know, the serious monks. You know, and so you know my understanding is they communicated. You know, I don't know if they used Ouija boards or other kinds of divination. I'm sure it wasn't literally a Ouija board, but divination tools, you know, to report back on what was going on the other side. And, of course, within Buddhism, there's a big belief in reincarnation. So if a bodhisattva comes back, they're going to tell you, but, you know, here I have the truth. Here's the information you need, you know. So you have people like the Buddha explaining, here are the cycles of birth and rebirth.
The other side, of course, and we touched on this a little bit, evil, demonic side. Why is that there? Because I'm convinced it is. I'm convinced it is.
I'm convinced it is too. I wish I had an awesome answer to that question for you. You know, that's one of the big mysteries as well. I don't know if it's a yin yang type of thing. There's so many conflicting answers to that question. That's one I haven't locked onto myself yet that I feel comfortable, you know, sticking with, but I do agree that it is there, you know, absolutely. They
are lining up to talk with you, so let's go to the phones. We'll go to Mayat in New York City. Hi, Mayat, right. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Such a fascinating show. And Jeffrey, since I'm near you in New York, I would like some information. This is the first part of my question, and I'd like some information about how we can arrange to see your plays, Boneyard and Tesla's Letters. So the second part is I purchased a book. It's still on the shelf. I haven't gotten to it yet, but it's by a woman who traveled extensively in Tibet. And one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to reading it is she talks about, I believe it's called the Tulka, T-U-L-K-A, and you need to clarify if that's the correct word and if I'm pronouncing it. But it deals with something very powerful as to how thought forms can be, a thought form can be actually become a physical manifest. And I find that very interesting. And so if you understand my questions, I'll listen over the air.
Okay, great. Yes. Well, the first part, that one's easy. So Boneyards, I just did recently in New York last month at the Morbid Anatomy Museum in Brooklyn, and I'll be doing it again there in October. I'm going to be doing a show next in Philadelphia at the Art Church coming up in June. And the best thing to do would be to go to my website, which I know is on the Coast to Coast site, brainonfire.com. Then from there, go to the Boneyards page, get on the mailing list, and then you will be immediately informed about when and where for upcoming shows.
Great.
Tesla's Letters, I don't think it's running right now. You know, once the script is out there and published, it gets done, and sometimes I don't even know about it till well afterward. It's been done many times over the years, and it's, you know, sometimes done in just public readings, and it's used in some history classes. But it was published by Samuel French, which is America's oldest publisher of play scripts. So it's available. The script is available, you know, wherever fine books are sold. If they don't have it, they can order it for you for sure.
Could be a movie. What do you think? Tesla's Letters.
Could be. I think it would need some adaptation. That probably is why it hasn't happened already. It got quite a bit of attention over the years, but yeah, it would take quite a bit of adapting. I think it was really meant for the stage, but you know, anything's possible. It could certainly happen, and I certainly wouldn't turn it down if it happened.
She had another question about something I don't understand, but the Tolka or something like that.
I'm sorry, I don't either. Yeah, off the top of my head, I am not sure about that. So yeah, I'm gonna have to pass on that one. Sorry about that.
Let's go now to first time caller Jeffrey in St. Louis. Jeffrey, you're on with Jeffrey Stanley. Go ahead.
Hi, Jeffrey. How are you?
Hi, good.
I have a very interesting observation. I'll try to talk as quick as I can here. The picture that was taken by the kid in the red shirt at the Colorado Hotel, the cloak figure in the background.
Yes.
Okay, now, I found some very interesting observations. I first observed the picture for 30 minutes, and then I went back and looked at it for an hour and a half on full zoom on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I found 47 faces in that picture.
Jeez. Oh, my Lord.
And I counted them all. And also, I found something very interesting that I think you might want to know. One part in the middle of the zoom, I moved around and I got to one part of it there. There was a scenario on there, like a, looked sort of like a black and white chalk drawing kind of, sort of, but the people looked very real. There was three men at a long type table, a man standing at the end of the table, but out in the room. There was four women that were on their hands and knees naked with straps around their necks and straps around their torso and around their waist, and he had two reins in his hand, and he had a whip back in his left hand ready to whip them, but he hadn't whipped them yet. And the two on this end of the table guys were looking at the women on the floor, and the other guy was at the other end yelling something at the guy who was.
Well, that's bizarre. That's for
indeed
very strange.
I know the picture he's talking about. Whoa, I hope he goes and leaves that comment, because I'd like to explore it more. It's blowing my mind, though.
He's probably going to think about that picture all night.
Oh.
Let's go to Tina in Athens, Georgia. You're on the air. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I would love to be able, you know, like, I lost my mom not long ago. It was very close, and it was very... very,
sorry to hear that.
Sort of sudden. Okay, she wanted to live, you know, so it's very hard. So, but I'm very spiritual, and I believe the word of the Bible. Of course I want to talk to her, but that is too scary to think that somebody on the other side could trick you. You see, trick you. And I'm trying to understand where you're coming from when you do what you're doing, even those people like me want.
Well, you can be tricked on the other side. You know, I think this happens, Jeffrey. This is something that even concerned you when you were with the Ouija board. You really don't know exactly who's coming through on the other side.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. And first of all, I'm sorry for your loss. And the last thing you want in a vulnerable time is to be tricked by anyone. I think that, you know, it's a very heavy question. I think if your loved one came to you, you probably would not be tricked. I think that you would know, and they would make sure that you knew that it was really them, and there would be some sincerity there that you would feel. At the same time, you know, my personal belief is I think it would be lovely if that happened early on, not long after the person had passed. If years have gone by and they're appearing to you, I would start to be worried about them and urge them to move along. That's for their own well-being.
Jeffrey, where do you take this next for yourself? I mean, as you continue to evolve, obviously you're not going to just stop. What's next for you?
Well, I think that I want to keep doing the show. I mean, the thing is about the show, it's not a huge profit-making operation. I purposely limit it to 20 per show. There's something cathartic and profound about it for me when I do it. And so, I feel like it touches people in the audience. So I'm continuing to look for opportunities to do it and to keep reaching out, because every time I do it, I learn something new. And the stuff about the Ouija board, the EVPs, yes, you could do that alone. I could sit home doing that, but there is something powerful and communal about doing it in a group when we're all in earnest trying to do this. And seeing when something does happen, you know, there are multiple witnesses there, and sometimes it's great to do a reality check with each other. There are strength in numbers when you do it together. There's a kind of solidarity that happens. And I've actually made a couple of very good friends out of this, with audience members, you know, which is something I never thought, you know, would happen. So it's kind of, you know, taken on a life of its own. And, you know, I definitely have other projects, other things going on, but this is something I hope I can keep on doing.
What has the audience reaction to Boneyards been?
It's been a variety of stuff. Some people laugh, you know, some people.
When they get it?
I'm sorry?
Do they get it?
Oh, I think they get it. Oh, yeah, I think they get it. I think they know where I'm coming from. And I think even if they are not believers, they know I'm sincere. They might come in expecting some shtick, let's say, and I have a sense of humor. There's certainly some humorous moments in it, but I think by the end of it, they know that it's real and it's me, and I'm being real, and I'm telling some, you know, my deep, dark secrets. And, you know, I think there are non-believers who probably are still non-believers when they leave, and there are some people who have who've been given pause. Sometimes there are people who don't say much during the show, or the Ouija board is saying something that appears to be gibberish, and we kind of knock it off early and wrap up and go home, and then someone will email me. You know, I get home, I've got an email from an audience member through the website saying, I didn't want to say anything there, but I'm pretty sure that was my grandmother, you know. And so some people are just embarrassed, I think, still, even in that very welcoming situation, to admit that maybe they believe in it. Sometimes when I call on volunteers for the, you know, there's, I'll point to someone and say, how about you, sir? And someone will say, you don't want me doing the Ouija board. I'm a total skeptic. And I say, you're the perfect person. You don't have to be a believer for it to work, you know.
I was in Kent, Ohio this weekend. And yeah. Last weekend, and on the panel, one of them, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, my co-author with the Talking to the Dead book. And we all talked about the possibility, what if the other side did not exist? Now, the consensus was it does exist. But we tried to hypothesize what happens if it doesn't exist. It's a very stark, cold feeling, Jeffrey. It really is. So let me ask you that question. What if it doesn't exist?
Well, what if it doesn't exist? I mean, it's stark and cold, but, you know, either way, we have to go there. So, you know, I think the worst scenario would be, you know, you go to sleep and you're done, you know. So I'm sure there are people who would look at that with a sense of relief, perhaps. So I don't know. I mean, I would certainly be devastated to find out it was true, but I also don't, you know, it's one of those things that's kind of a catch-22, because if there's nothing, you won't know that there's nothing once you're gone, you know.
Well, that's what I've always told people. I said, if I'm right and it exists, we're going to know that on the other side. If I'm wrong, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Let's go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Jeffrey. Let me get right to it. I'm a scientific-minded person. I know science, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I'm an atheist. So I want to come up to the point of view of what you're talking about from a scientific point of view. Instead of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, when it was written, I presume, 1,000 years ago or more, think about modern science, modern physics, astrophysics, cosmology, and particle physics. I think some of the things you're talking about relates to science in now in the 21st century. I'm thinking of two things: the Large Hadron Collider in CERN, for example, if and when it discovers, maybe sometime this year, 2015, other dimensions, as well in cosmology, if and when through understanding the Big Bang better, we understand that there may be other universes, the multiverse. So what I'm saying is, in addition to what I just said, if you think of a Venn diagram, like a circle, an inch-long circle, and around it is a 3-inch-long circle, and our 4-dimensional space-time continuum we call the universe is the inner circle, and around it, the 3-inch circle is, let's say, another realm, another dimension where maybe the mind, the person's mind exists when the person dies. Now expand all of that one dimensional more so that the inner circle is an inner sphere, like 3 dimensions, actually 4 dimensions, space and 3 dimensions of space and 4 dimensions of time. And the outer 3-inch sphere, which would be really more than 3 dimensions, would be 5 dimensions or up to 7 or 11 or 12 dimensions, as Michio Kaku talks about, is the greater reality, hyperspace, like Virchow C. Hoagland talks about. Could maybe what I'm leading to, what I'm trying to get to, be the ultimate answer that all of this is not supernatural, as some of your guests, George, have said, but it is natural, that natural science does not understand yet, and hopefully in our lifetimes, hopefully, because we're both 865, we might understand some of this at least, if not all of this. It's scientific, not spiritual or religious.
Interesting take. What do you think of that, Jeffrey?
I'm in. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, we're ever evolving toward a greater understanding of this. And hearing him talk, it was so interesting, because when he's talking about the Venn diagrams and the circles within circles and so on, what I'm seeing is a lot of Tibetan Buddhist art, and I'm seeing the Wheel of Life. And I'm thinking, you know, a Tibetan Buddhist mystic might have made these very observations he's talking about, but had to describe it in their own terms, you know. So I think that, you know, if something like the Tibetan Book of the Dead is hitting the same point he's talking about, and we eventually understand it scientifically, that works for me, you know. There certainly is a lot that science doesn't know yet, and there's certainly a lot of stuff that science has been wrong about, you know. I mean, the case in point that always pops into my head is the giant squid, you know, was one of those animals that was thought to be a mythological creature until this century. You know, now we know it's real. So it wasn't photographed until this century. So, you know, who knows what lies in store for us on the scientific front, but that works for me.
Why do you think Hinduism and Buddhism got it and understood this? About life after death, and they were into it.
I don't know, and it gets into heavier questions too. That, you know, I think that there's a lot of the stuff that was in the Bible, that was in the New Testament and in the Hebrew Bible. A lot of it, I think, has kind of just fallen by the wayside, or maybe didn't jibe with mores of the times. When, for example, the King James Bible was being rewritten as the King James Bible. I mean, if you look at Kabbalah, you know, the books that make up the study of Kabbalah within Judaism, there's a big belief in reincarnation there.
Indeed. We're going to come back, Jeffrey. We're going to take final calls with you in just a moment. Well, next hour, open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, have you had a chance yet to watch our television show Beyond Belief? You can. There's a special promotion going on. Here's the website to go and watch it. It's www.beyondbelief.com. That's beyondbelief.com. Welcome back. Jeffrey Stanley with us. We'll take your final phone calls as well as we talk about the supernatural side of this living existence that we all have. Jeffrey, when you talk to people who know you and know you well, what do they confide about the other side with you? Are they believers too?
More people than I realized, for sure. More people than I realized listen to your show. It's like a guilty pleasure for a lot of people. Among my close friends, I'm talking about. When I told them I'd be on, I had several people emailing me going, oh, I've been listening to that for years. Like, you have? Why haven't we ever talked about it? Because I listen to it all the time. And so, yeah, that's funny. I think a lot of people are embarrassed about it. You know, a friend of mine is a physician who recently, I mean, an MD recently confided that he subscribes to the 40 in Times. And has had a number of supernatural experiences happen to him. And he's a big believer in a lot of things. And so I think, it cuts across all walks of life. There is no type in terms of who believes in the supernatural. It cuts across all kinds of professions, all kinds of walks of life. But some people are very self-assured about it and don't mind talking about it, and some people are kind of secretly coming to tell you things. So, yeah, I've had friends who say, yeah, you know, actually a thing like that, you know, my grandmother came and spoke to me once the week after she died. And, you know, a lot of people have stories like that, but it takes sometimes a little poking or maybe it's just a moment where they feel safe that they can tell you and you're not going to ridicule them. And, you know, so much comes out. And I've had so many people come up to me after shows, especially the total strangers, when they're leaving, you know, want to come up and hug me or talk to me and just say thank you just because I talked about it and didn't make them feel belittled about, you know, an experience of themselves that they themselves have had at some point.
Okay, back to the calls we go now as they continue to line up. Driving in Kentucky, Miriam is with us, first-time caller. Hi, Miriam. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good evening, Jeffrey, George. Okay, you talked to an atheist, you're a Christian, and now you're talking to a Muslim. Okay, you were talking about the entities that's in the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And you haven't mentioned studying or reading the Quran, as you mm-hmm. say you've been in the Middle East, because these entities are talked about in the Quran. It's
the
talked
jinn.
About in the Hadith. The prophet, Sulayl Islam, and they're called jinns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, and I'm not here to preach. I'm just here because there's scientific miracles in the Quran. So this is written 1,400 years ago, and not one word has been changed. So the jinn are actually entities that are created from smokeless fire. Shaitan, or as you guys say, Shaitan.
The devil. That's Shaitan. The devil. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He wasn't a fallen angel, as a lot of people believe, we believe. He actually had pride. And when God created Adam, Iblis, you say Shaitan, we say Iblis or Shaitan, refused in his pride to bow down before Adam, because Allah created Adam out of the soils from the different parts of the earth. So, you know, he didn't want to. He says, I am, you know, your worshiper, and you want me to bow down to this man that you have created from soil, from dirt. So, you know, that was the part of it, and his followers are jinns. Now, the jinns, you have a jinn, I have a jinn, everybody has a jinn. We have our angels, as you know, the good, write down the good deeds, the bad deeds. But the jinn are the ones that tempt you. They are the ones that a lot of people believe, you know, they have these experiences that are actually from jinns. I've had experiences where I was susceptible to them. I was a spiritualist before. I've studied Islam, I've studied spirituality, I've studied Buddhism, I've studied a lot of religions. I've had a lot of experience, I've had out-of-body experience. I know, but there's a lot of things that are also khayb, which means the unseen. Only God knows. It's not that we're not capable of knowing everything. But the jinns, I want to caution you, Jeffrey, please be careful with this. As your wife's uncle, did you say his uncle, her
correct.
Uncle?
Yeah, correct, cautioned
correct. Cautioned you, there are things that are not meant for us to know, for not to meant for us to bother. I don't know another word for that, the correct word. Be very careful because like, there's been studies done, Amityville
Horror.
That house. Those were actually djinns. Now, djinns are cursed because they were cursed to inhabit the dark places, like the bathrooms, dirty houses, abandoned houses, fallen down houses, because they're not like us. They're not like angels. There's no such things as ghosts.
Well, let me say this, Marion, because we've talked a lot about the djinn on this program. And actually, Rosemary Ellen Guiley is pretty well an expert on that. And, you know, a lot of Hollywood, for example, Jeffrey, would think of the djinn as genies, if you remember some of those old films and things like that.
And let me just chime in also and say, actually, I have read the Quran. I certainly have read the Quran. And, you know, I have my Muslim friends. The reason I don't talk much about it is because, first of all, my Muslim friends have said you aren't going to get it in English. You have to learn Arabic, then read it in Arabic, then you'd get the awesomeness of it. And, you know, it's so beautiful it'll make you weep. And I don't doubt it. But as for the content of it, I have at least a layperson's understanding, because I am very curious about those religions. But my own personal conclusion is the Tibetan Book of the Dead speaks to me more than the other religions. But, and it was funny you mentioned the djinn, because I was going to say I know so much about the djinn from listening to Coast to Coast. That's where I got my djinn education from. And you know, everything she said was absolutely amazing.
All right, next up, Marianne, thank you for your call, by the way. Appreciate you being part of the program. You're very welcome, too. We go next to Joe in Toronto, in Canada, of course. Go ahead, Joseph. Thank you.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, hi.
Can you hear me? Yeah, the example that your guest gave about extra dimension seems kind of elementary to me. I haven't read hyperspace for a long time, but my understanding of it is that just as, like the four dimensions that we see, coexist, all the other dimensions coexist. And that, say he gave an example of a 3-inch and a 4-inch. Well, say that there's one dimension that's infinite in size, and one dimension that is like a singularity, that they are coexistent, so really, there is no beginning, there is no end. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, I mean, I think that stuff is, absolutely amazing. And if science can make this make sense to me, I'm there, I'm with it. And I don't think necessarily what we call, science, the supernatural, for lack of a better word, and science have to be at odds with each other. And if they both, in the end, are trying to explain the same thing, and we get there eventually, overall, then that'll be pretty cool.
You know, with all the things that are going on in this world right now, you would think that we would get a little assistance from the other side, Jeffrey, and I don't think we are. So what does that tell you?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we've got all this strife. I had a program last night called The World in Turmoil. We're not getting any help from anybody, right?
Well, you mean help from the other side?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, things certainly do seem bleak, but there have been much more bleaker times in history. I mean, there have been much more devastating diseases, pestilence, the Holocaust, World War II. I mean, we've been through worse so far, two atomic bombs and so on. But at the same time, yes, there's great evil in the world. So, sometimes when people say to me, aren't you afraid of unleashing something evil? I always think, by touching a Ouija board, pick up a newspaper. I don't think the evil needs me to invite them in. It's like there's rampant, evil is running rampant in the world and has been for a very long time. So, and I think at the same time, there's great good in the world running rampant, if you will.
Oh, yes. Too. I think so. A lot of good.
Yes.
We go to Corey in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Corey, hello. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Very welcome.
I had a friend pass away 3 years ago, and we were cleaning out his apartment, and something just told me to hit the voice recorder on my phone. I set it on a bookshelf, and I got an EVP that clearly says what sounds to me like Anacawana. And I have no idea what that means, and I was wondering if you could help me.
Anacawana. I have no idea what that means.
Have you Googled it at all?
Yes, I haven't really found anything. I found something about mountains.
Anacawana. Wonder even what language that might be.
I don't know, but it's been bugging me for 3 years. I listen to it over and over and over again. It's clear. I mean, it's a whisper, it's loud, and I don't know what it means.
I would hold on to that and keep it in the back of your mind. I've certainly got my share of mysterious messages like that before that I thought were gibberish, and then, you know, time passes, and sooner or later I mention it to the right person or come stumble upon the right thing online that makes it all make perfect sense. Often it will wind up being in a different language, and that's why it seems hard to find at first. So I would hold on to that and keep searching. I wish I could help you. I'm not immediately familiar with that word, though.
When dealing with the other side, did you ever have anybody come across from the other side that you were convinced they were tricking you?
Only when it was really obvious. Like, I've never had anyone come to me saying, "You, I am your dead great-grandfather," or I've never had anything like that happen to me where it was a close relative tricking, you know, or someone posing as a close relative. The ones where I feel tricked are when it says, like I mentioned earlier, "I am Mark Twain," you know, "I am Geronimo." Then you have to sort of question. I mean, maybe it's going to be them. And, you know, the Jimi Hendrix example is one because we, you know, was it really Jimi Hendrix or not? I mean, setting the Christmas tree on fire on one hand seems diabolical. On the other hand, we got it out and no great harm came. But, you know, what did Jimi Hendrix do? He set guitars on fire on stage. So even seemed like a Jimmy thing, you know, it was almost like a gift to us. So you could interpret that as evil, but it also was kind of spectacular and theatrical. So, you know, was that really Jimi Hendrix? I don't know. I mean, if I have to say yes, it was, or no, it wasn't, I'm going to say yes, it was. I believe that it was.
We've got Daniel now in Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George.
Hi again.
Hi. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
Hi there.
George, I got to tell you, you're amazing, man. Very patient man you are. I'd have a difficult time doing your job at certain times.
Sometimes I bite my fingers, but go ahead.
So, Jeffrey, there was a guest on Coast to Coast not too long ago. Her name was Karen. I forgot the last name. And she talked about the Ouija. And
Karen Dolman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
She said that you should always treat it like a door and open your door and make sure you close it. That's very important because things could attach to you or something like that. And you said the opposite not too long ago. And
wait, I'm sorry. What did I say?
Oh, and she also said not to use it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you said that that's okay.
You mean the using it by yourself part?
Yeah.
No. I don't. I never said that. I didn't. Or if I did, it was definitely a slip of the tongue. But no, I don't think you should either. Actually, I know some people do and say it's not a big deal. I don't know whether it necessarily lets something evil. I mean, I know I've had people say, "Oh, you got to have three or four people, so it splits the energy." And that to me sounds questionable. I think there's a very practical reason for not doing it alone, which is that sometimes it will say, you know, naughty things. And if you're a highly suggestible person, it's good to have somebody there to help you do a reality check. So that's my suggestion or belief about not doing it alone, is because it could just wind up freaking you out unnecessarily.
Thanks, Daniel. Who should not use the Ouija board?
Anyone who is terrified of demons or the supernatural, there's no reason to do it just to scare yourself, and which is, you know, I know a lot of young people especially want to do it because it's scary. Well, guess what? Something scary is going to happen. You're going to run screaming from the room. But partly it's because you're looking for it and asking for that to happen. So, you know, I think anyone who is, you know, afraid that it might happen should, and who maybe You know, I mean, I'm highly suggestible about certain things. I think maybe we all are about certain things. But if you know that you're prone to be afraid of ghosts, let's say, if you know you're terrified of the thought of ghosts, I mean, don't do it. There's no reason to make yourself, you know, prove something by doing something you don't really feel like doing.
But go to Linda.
If you have any reticence at all about doing it, don't bother doing it. There's no reason.
Go to Orange, California now. Linda's with us. Hello, Linda. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Thank you for having the show. I certainly enjoy it.
You're very welcome.
I had an experience. My sister died in December, and the night before we were supposed to scatter her cremains, I was alone in the house, and all of a sudden the room just smelled so heavily of red roses. I had to leave the house to breathe. And after I caught my breath and went back in, the smell was gone, and the house was warm. And I wasn't afraid, but I thought it might be either be a warning or she was telling me that it was okay. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sure does. I mean, there's definitely signs from the other side, and they utilize just about anything they can to try to communicate with you, like your case, Jeffrey, with the Jimi Hendrix, using the cat to strum the guitar.
Absolutely. And I think when those things happen with a close loved one and it's not long after, I think the closer it is to the time they've passed, the more likely it is a true event, that person coming to you.
Linda, thanks. Let's see if...
Let's
see if we get CWN in Chattanooga, Tennessee now. CW, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, great show. Thank God for Coast to Coast. It's just so amazing. I'm no expert on Tibetan Buddhism, but my understanding of the usefulness of it is that it's to be used as a prayer to guide the spirit of someone who has just passed. And for instance, I used it with my mother when she passed away. I took the whole next day after she was buried and read the Tibetan Book of the Dead for her, because I don't have a connection with a Tibetan Lama or a monk. And my understanding is that that's who should translate it for people these days. And the source of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, my understanding is that it's from thousands of years of Tibetan Lamas reincarnating and then recording their experiences as they experience death and coming back and reporting on it and collating a system of knowledge on the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
And great knowledge it is. So we are out of time. Jeffrey, keep in touch with us, will you?
All right, will do, and thanks a lot, George.
All right, Jeffrey Stanley. Now, I'm going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. A couple hours of open lines. And get ready to let your fingers do the walking. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.